past her. You are a disgrace to our family, to this kingdom. You whore yourself to a foreign queen, and for what? I begged you to control yourself when you were sent to hunt Lorkhan. I begged you to be smart. You might as well have spat in my face.
Fenris snarled, and the sound must have been some secret language between them, because Connell snorted.
Leave? Why would I ever want to leave? And for what? That?
Even with her eyes shut, Aelin knew he pointed toward her.
No, Fenris. I will not leave. And neither will you.
A low whine cut the damp air.
That will be all, Connell,
Maeve said. And light flashed, penetrating even the darkness behind Aelin's lids. She breathed and breathed and breathed.
You know how quickly this can end, Aelin,
Maeve said. Aelin kept her eyes shut.
Tell me where you hid the word keys. Swear the blood oath.
The order doesn't matter, I suppose. Aelin opened her eyes, lifted her bound hands before her, and gave Maeve an obscene gesture, as filthy and foul as she'd ever made. Maeve's smile tightened, just barely.
Cairn.
Before Aelin could inhale a bracing breath, hands slammed onto her shoulders, pushed down. She couldn't stop her scream then. Not as he shoved her into a burning pit of agony that raced up her legs, her spine. Oh gods, oh gods. From far away, Fenris's snarl sliced through her screaming, followed by Maeve's lilting.
Very well, Cairn.
The pressure on her shoulders lightened. Aelin bowed over her knees. A full breath. She needed to get a full breath down. She couldn't. Her lungs, her chest only heaved in shallow, rasping pants. Her vision blurred, swimming, the blood that had spread beyond her knees rippling with it. Endure, outlast.
My eyes told me an interesting tidbit of information this morning,
Maeve drawled.
An account that you were currently in Terrasen, readying the little army you gathered for war.
You, and Prince Rowan, and my two disgraced warriors,
along with your usual group.
Aelin hadn't realized she'd been holding on to it. That sliver of hope, foolish and pathetic. That sliver of hope that he'd come for her. She had told him not to, after all. Had told him to protect Terrasen. Had arranged everything for him to make a desperate stand against Morath.
Useful to have a shapeshifter to play your part as queen, Maeve mused. Though I wonder how long the ruse can last without your special gifts to incinerate Morath's legions. How long until the allies you collected start asking why the Firebringer does not burn?
It was no lie. The details, her plan with Lysandra. There was no way for Maeve to know them unless they were truth. Could Maeve have made a lucky guess in lying about it? Yes.
Yes, and yet.
Rowan had gone with them. They'd all gone to the north and had reached Terrasen. A small mercy. A small mercy, and yet. The glass around her sparkled in the mist and moonlight. Her blood a thick stain wending through it.
I do not wish to wipe away this world, as Erewhon does,
said Maeve, as if they were no more than two friends conversing at one of Rifthold's finest tea courts, if any still existed, after the Iron Teeth had sacked the city.
I like Irelia precisely the way it is. I always have.
The glass, the blood, the veranda and moonlight eddied in her vision.
I have seen many wars, sent my warriors to fight in them, end them. I have seen how destructive they are. The very glass you lay on comes from one of those wars, you know, from the glass mountains in the south. They were once sand dunes, but dragons burned them to glass during an ancient and bloody conflict. A hum of amusement.
Some claim it's the hardest glass in the world, the most unyielding. I thought,
Given your own fire-breathing heritage, you might appreciate its origins. A click of the tongue, and then Cairn was there again, hands on her shoulders, pushing, harder and harder. Gods, gods, gods! There were no gods to save her. Not really. Aelin's screams echoed off rock and water. Alone. She was alone in this. It would be of no use to beg the White Wolf to help her. The hands on her shoulders pulled away. Heaving, bile burning her throat, Aelin once more curled over her knees. Endure, outlast. Maeve simply continued.
The dragons didn't survive that war, and they never rose again.
Her lips curved, and Aelin knew Maeve had ensured it. Other fire wielders, hunted and killed.
She didn't know why she felt it then,
that shred of sorrow for creatures that had not existed for untold centuries, who would never again be seen on this earth. Why it made her so unspeakably sad. Why it mattered at all, when her very blood was shrieking in agony. Maeve turned to Connell, remaining in fey form beside the throne, raging eyes still fixed on his brother.
Refreshments?
Aelin knelt in that glass, as food and drink were gathered. Knelt as Maeve dined on cheese and grapes, smiling at her the entire time. Aelin couldn't stop the shaking that overtook her, the brutal numbness. Deep, deep she drifted. It did not matter if Rowan wasn't coming, if the others had obeyed her wishes to fight for Terrasen. She would save it in her own way, too, for as long as she could. She owed Terrasen that much, would never fully repay that debt. From far away, the words echoed, and memory shimmered. She let it pull her back, pull her out of her body. She sat beside her father on the few steps descending into the open-air fighting ring of the castle. It was more temple than brawling pit, flanked by weathered pale columns that for centuries had witnessed the rise of Terrasen's mightiest warriors. This late in the summer afternoon, it was empty, the light golden as it streamed in. Rogue Alathinius ran a hand down his round shield, the dark metal scarred and dinged from horrors long since vanquished.
Someday,
he said as she traced one of the long scratches over the ancient surface,
this shield will pass to you, as it was given to me and your great uncle before me.
Her breath was still jagged from the training they'd done. Only the two of them, as he'd promised. The hour once a week that he set aside for her. Her father placed the shield on the stone step below them, its thunk reverberating through her sandaled feet. It weighed nearly as much as she did, yet he carried it as if it were merely an extension of his arm.
And you,
her father went on,
like the many great women and men of this house, shall use it to defend our kingdom.
Her eyes rose to his face. Handsome and unlined, solemn and kingly.
That is your charge, your sole duty.
He braced a hand on the rim of the shield, tapping it for emphasis.
To defend, Aelin. To protect.
She had nodded, not understanding, and her father had kissed her brow, as if he half hoped she'd never need to.
Cairn ground her into the glass again. No sound remained in her for screaming.
I am growing bored of this, Maeve said, her silver tray of food forgotten.
She leaned forward on her throne, the owl behind her rustling its wings.
Do you believe, Aelin Galathinius, that I will not make the sacrifices necessary to obtain what I seek?
She had forgotten how to speak. Had not uttered a word here anyway.
Allow me to demonstrate, Maeve said, straightening.
Fenris's eyes flared with warning.
Maeve waved an ivory hand at Connell, frozen beside her throne, where he'd remained since he'd brought the queen's food. Do it.
Connell drew one of the knives from his belt, stepped toward Fenris. No. The word was a cold clang through her. Her lips even formed it as she jerked against the chains, lines of liquid fire shooting along her legs. Connell advanced another step. Glass crunched and cracked beneath her. No, no. Connell stopped above Fenris, his hand shaking. Fenris only snarled up at him. Connell raised his knife into the air between them. She could not surge to her feet, could not rise against the chains and glass, could do nothing, nothing. Cairn gripped her by the neck, fingers digging in hard enough to bruise, and ground her again into the blood-drenched shards. A rasping, broken scream cracked from her lips. Fenris, her only tether to life, to this reality. Connell's blade glinted. He'd come to help at Mistward. He had defied Maeve then. Perhaps he'd do it now. Perhaps his hateful words had been a deception. The blade plunged down. Not into Fenris, but Connell's own heart. Fenris moved, or tried to. Maw gaping in what might have been a scream, he tried and tried to lunge for his brother, as Connell crashed to the tiled veranda, as blood began to pool. The owl on Maeve's throne flapped its wings once, as if in horror. But Cairn let out a low laugh, the sound rumbling past Aelin's head. Real. This was real. It had to be. Something cold and oily lurched through her. Her hands slackened at her sides. The light left Connell's dark eyes. His black hair spilled on the floor around him in a dark mirror to the blood leaking away. Fenris was shaking. Aelin might have been, too.
You tainted something that belonged to me, Aelin Galathinius, Maeve said. And now, it must be purged.
Fenris was whining, still attempting to crawl to the brother dead on the ground. Fae could heal. Perhaps Connell's heart could mend. Connell's chest rose in a rattling, shallow breath. It didn't move again. Fenris's howl cleaved the night. Cairn let go, and Aelin slumped onto the glass, hands and wrists stinging. She let herself lie there, half sprawled, let the crown tumble off her head and skitter across the floor, dragon glass spraying where it bounced. Bounced, then rolled, curving across the veranda, all the way to the stone railing, and into the roaring, hateful river below.
There is no one here to help you.
Maeve's voice was as empty as the gaps between stars.
And there is no one coming for you.
Aelin's fingers curled in the ancient glass.
Think on it. Think on this night, Aelin.
Maeve snapped her fingers.
We're done here.
Cairn's hands wrapped around the chains. Her legs buckled, feet splitting open anew. She barely felt it. Barely felt it through the rage and the sea of fire down deep, deep below. But as Cairn hauled her up, his savage hands roving, she struck. Two blows. A shard of glass plunged into the side of his neck. He staggered back, cursing as blood sprayed. Aelin whirled, glass ripping her soles apart, and hurled the shard in her other hand, right at Maeve. It missed by a hair's breadth, scraping Maeve's pale cheek before clattering off the throne behind her. The owl perched just above it screeched. Rough hands gripped her, Cairn shouting, raging shrieks of, you little bitch, but she didn't hear them, not as a trickle of blood snaked down Maeve's cheek. Black blood, as dark as night, as dark as the eyes that the queen fixed on her, a hand rising to her cheek. Aelin's legs slackened, and she didn't fight the guards heaving her away. A blink, and the blood flowed red. Its scent as coppery as her own. A trick of the light. A hallucination. Another dream. Maeve peered at the crimson stain coating her pale fingers. An onyx wind snapped for Aelin, wrapping around her neck. It squeezed. And she knew no more. Chapter 9.
Cairn tied her to the altar and left her. Fenris didn't enter until long after she'd awoken. The blood was still leaking from where Cairn had also left the glass in her legs, her feet. It was not a wolf who slipped into the stone chamber, but a male. Each of Fenris's steps told her enough before she beheld the deadness of his eyes, the pallor of his usually golden skin. He stared at nothing, even as he stopped before where she lay chained. Beyond words, unsure her throat would even work, Aelin blinked 3 times. Are you all right? 2 blinks answered. No. Lingering salt tracks streaked his cheeks. Her chains rustled as she stretched a shaking finger toward him. Silently, he slid his hand into hers. She mouthed the words, even though he likely couldn't make them out with the slit of the mask's mouth. I'm sorry. His grip only tightened. His gray jacket was unbuttoned at the top. It gaped open wide enough to reveal a hint of the muscled chest beneath, as if he hadn't bothered to seal it back up in his hurry to leave. Her stomach turned over. What he'd undoubtedly had to do afterward, with his twin's body still lying on the veranda tiles behind him? I didn't know he hated me so much, Fenris rasped. Aelin squeezed his hand. Fenris closed his eyes, drawing in a shaking breath. She gave me leave only to take out the glass. When it's out, I go back over there. He pointed with his chin toward the wall where he usually sat. He made to examine her legs, but she squeezed his hand again and blinked 2 times. No. Let him stay in this form for a while longer. Let him mourn as a male and not a wolf. Let him stay in this form so she could hear a friendly voice, feel a gentle touch. She began to cry. She couldn't help it. Couldn't stop it once it started. Hated every tear and shuddering breath, every jerk of her body that sent lightning through her legs and feet. I'll get them out, he said. And she couldn't tell him, couldn't start to explain that it wasn't the glass, the shredded skin down to the bone. He wasn't coming. He wasn't coming to get her. She should be glad. Should be relieved. She was relieved, and yet. Fenris drew out a pair of pincers from the toolkit that Cairn had left on a table nearby. I'll be as quick as I can. Biting her lip hard enough to draw blood. Aelin turned her head away while the first piece of glass slid from her knee. Flesh and sinew sundered anew. Salt overpowered the tang of her blood. And she knew he was crying. The scent of their tears filled the tiny room as he worked. Neither of them said a word. Chapter 10. The world had become only freezing mud, and red and black blood, and the screams of the dying rising to the frigid sky. Lysandra had learned these months that battle was no orderly, neat thing. It was chaos and pain, and there were no grand heroic duels. Only the slashing of her claws and the rip of her fangs, the clash of dented shields and bloodied swords. Armor that had once been distinguishable quickly turned gore-splattered, and were it not for the dark of her enemy's colors, Lysandra wasn't entirely certain how she would have discerned ally from foe. Their lines held. At least they had that much. Shield to shield and shoulder to shoulder in the snowy field that had since become a mud pit, they'd met the legion Erewhon had marched through Eldris. Adian had picked the field, the hour, the angle of this battle. The others had pushed for instant attack, but he'd let Morath march far enough inland, right to where he wanted them. Location was as important as numbers, was all he'd said. Not to Lysandra, of course. He barely said a damn word to her these days. Now certainly wasn't the time to think of it. To care. Their allies and soldiers believed Aelin Galathinius remained en route to them, allowing Lysandra to don the ghost leopard's form. Ren Alsbrook had even commissioned plated armor for the leopard's chest, sides, and flanks. So light as to not be a hindrance, but solid enough that the three blows she'd been too slow to stop. An arrow to the side, then two slashes from enemy swords, had been deflected. Little wounds burned along her body. Blood matted the fur of her paws from the slaughtering she'd done amongst the front lines and being torn open on fallen swords and snapped arrows. But she kept going, the bane holding firm against what had been sent to meet them. Only 5,000. Only seemed like a ridiculous word, but it was what Adian and the others had used. Barely enough to be an army, considering Morath's full might, but large enough to pose a threat. To them, Lysandra thought, as she lunged between two Bane warriors and launched herself upon the nearest Volg foot soldier. The man had his sword upraised, poised to strike the Bane soldier before him. With the angle of his head as he brought the blade up, the Volg grunt didn't spy his oncoming death until her jaws were around his exposed neck. Hours into this battle, it was instinct to clamp down, flesh splitting like a piece of ripe fruit. She was moving again before he hit the earth, spitting his throat onto the mud, leaving the advancing Bane to decapitate his corpse. How far away that courtesan's life in Rifthold now seemed. Despite the death around her, she couldn't say she missed it. Down the line, Adian bellowed orders to the left flank. They'd let rest some of the Bane upon hearing how few Erewhon had sent, and had filled the ranks with a mixture of soldiers from the Lord of Terrasen's own small forces, and those from Prince Galen Ashriver and Queen Ansel of the Wastes, both of whom had additional warriors on the way. No need to reveal they had a small battalion of Fey soldiers, courtesy of Prince Endymion and Princess Selene Whitethorn, or that the silent assassins of the Red Desert were amongst them too. There would be a time when the surprise of their presence would be needed, Adian had argued, during the quick war council they'd conducted upon returning to the camp. Lysandra, winded from carrying him, Ren, and Murtaugh without rest, from Owlsbrook to the edges of Orinth, had barely listened to the debate. Adian had won anyway. As he won everything, through sheer will and arrogance. She didn't dare look down the lines to see how he was faring, shoulder to shoulder in the mud with his men. Ren led the right flank, where Lysandra had been stationed. Galen and Ansel had taken the left, Ravi and Soul of Surya fighting amongst them. She didn't dare see whose swords were still swinging. They would count their dead after the battle. There weren't many of the enemy left now, 1,000, if that. The soldiers at her back numbered far more. So Lysandra kept killing. The blood of her enemy like spoiled wine on her tongue. They won, though Adian was well aware that victory against 5,000 troops was likely fleeting, considering Morath's full host had yet to come. The rush of battle hadn't yet worn off of any of them, which was how Adian wound up in his war tent an hour after the last of the Volg had fallen. Standing around a map-covered table with Ren Owlsbrook and Ravi and Soul of Surya, where Lysandra had gone, he didn't know. She'd survived, which he supposed was enough. They hadn't washed away the gore or mud coating them so thoroughly that it had caked beneath their helmets, their armor. Their weapons lay in a discarded pile near the tent flaps. All would need to be cleaned. But later. "Losses on your side?" Adian asked Ravi and Sol. The two blonde brothers both ruled over Surya, though Sol was technically its lord. They'd never fought in the wars before now, despite being around Adian's age, but they'd held their own well enough today. Their soldiers had, too. The lords of Surya had lost their father to Otterland's butchering blocks a decade ago. Their mother surviving the wars, and Otterland's occupation through her cunning and the fact that her prosperous port city was too valuable to the Empire's trade route to decimate. Sol, it seemed, took after their even-keeled, clever mother. Ravi, cultish and brash, took after their late father. Both, however, hated Otterlin with a deep burning intensity belied by their pale blue eyes. Sol, his narrow face flecked with mud, loosed a breath through his nose. An aristocrat's nose, Adian had thought when they were children. The Lord had always been more of a scholar than a warrior, but it seemed he'd learned a thing or two in the grim years since.
Not many, thank the gods. 200 at most.
The soft voice was deceptive. Adian had learned that these weeks. Perhaps a weapon in its own right, to make people believe him gentle-hearted and weak, to mask the sharp mind and sharper instincts behind it.
And your flank?
Adian asked Ren. Ren ran a hand through his dark hair, mud crumbling away.
150, if that?
Adian nodded. Far better than he'd anticipated. The lines had held, thanks to the bane he'd interspersed amongst them. The Volg had tried to maintain order, yet once human blood began spilling, they had descended into battle lust and lost control, despite the screaming of their commanders. All Volg grunts, no princes among them. He knew it wasn't a blessing. Knew the 5,000 troops Erewhon had sent, ambushing Galen Ash River's ships by Ilium before setting upon Eldris, were just to wear them down. No Ilken, no Iron Teeth, no Wordhounds. They had still been hard to kill, had fought longer than most men. Ravi eyed the map.
Do we pull back to Orinth now, or head to the border?
Daryl ordered us to Orinth, if we survived.
Sol countered, frowning at his brother, at the light in Ravi's eyes that so clearly voiced where he wished to go. Darrow, who was too old to fight, had lingered in the secondary camp 20 miles behind theirs, to be the next line of defense if 5,000 troops somehow managed to destroy one of the most skilled fighting units Terrasen had ever seen. With word now undoubtedly arriving that the battle had gone in their favor, Darrow would likely head back to the capital. Adian glanced to Ren.
Do you think your grandfather can persuade Darrow and the other lords to press southward?
War by committee. It was absurd. Every choice he made, every battlefield he picked, he had to argue for it, convince them. As if these troops weren't for their queen, hadn't come for Aelin when she'd called. As if the Bane served anyone else. Ren blew out a breath toward the tent's high ceiling. A large space, but unadorned. They hadn't time or resources to furnish it into a proper war tent, setting up only a cot, a few braziers, and this table, along with a copper tub behind a curtain in the rear. As soon as this meeting was over, he'd find someone to fill it for him. Had Aelin been here, she might have heated it within a heartbeat. He shut out the tightness in his chest. Had Aelin been here, one breath from her and the 5,000 troops they'd exhausted themselves killing today would have been ash on the wind. None of the lords around him had questioned where their queen was, why she hadn't been on the field today. Perhaps they hadn't dared. Ren said,
If we move the armies south without permission from Darrow and the other lords, we'll be committing treason.
Treason? When we're saving our own damned kingdom?
Ravi demanded.
Darrow and the others fought in the last war,
Sol said to his brother.
And lost it, Ravi challenged. Badly.
He nodded toward Adian.
You were at Thoralis. You saw the slaughter.
The lords of Syria had no love for Darrow or the other lords who had led the forces in that final doomed stand. Not when their mistakes had led to the deaths of most of their court, their friends. It was of little concern that Terrasen had been so outnumbered that there had never been any hope, anyway. Ravi continued.
I say we head south, mass our forces at the border, rather than let Morath creep so close to Orinth.
And let any allies we might still have in the south not have so far to travel when joining with us,
Ren added.
Galen Ashriver and Ansel of the Wastes will go where we tell them, the Fae and Assassins, too.
Ravi pushed.
The rest of Ansel's troops are making their way northward now. We could meet them. Perhaps have them hammer from the west while we strike from the north.
A sound idea, and one Adian had contemplated. Yet to convince Darrow? He'd head to the other camp tomorrow, perhaps catch Darrow before he returned to the capital. Once he saw to it that the injured were being cared for.
but it seemed Darrow didn't want to wait for the morning.
General Ashriva? A male voice sounded from outside, young and calm.
Adian grunted an answer, and it was certainly not Darrow who entered, but a tall, dark-haired and gray-eyed man. No armor, though his mud-splattered dark clothes revealed a toned body beneath.
A letter lay in his hands, which he extended to Adian as he crossed the tent with graceful ease, then bowed.
Adian took the letter, his name written on it in Darrow's handwriting.
"Lord Darrow bids you to join him tomorrow," the messenger said, jerking his chin toward the sealed letter. "You and the army."
"What's the point of the letter?" Ravi muttered, "if you're just going to tell him what it says."
The messenger threw the young lord a bemused glance.
"I asked that too, my lord."
"Then I'm surprised you're still employed," Adian said.
"Not employed," the messenger said. "Just collaborating."
Adian opened the letter, and it indeed conveyed Darrow's order.
"For you to have gotten here so fast, you'd have needed to fly," he said to the messenger.
"This must have been written before the battle even started this morning."
The messenger smirked.
"I was handed two letters. One was for victory, the other defeat."
Bold.
This messenger was bold and arrogant for someone at Darrow's beck and call.
"What's your name?"
"Nox Owen."
The messenger bowed at the waist.
"From Peranth."
"I've heard of you,"
Ren said, scanning the man anew.
"You're a thief."
"Former thief,"
Nox amended, winking. "Now rebel and Lord Darrow's most trusted messenger." Indeed, a skilled thief would make for a smart messenger, able to slip in and out of places unseen. But Adian didn't care what the man did or didn't do.
"I assume you're not riding back tonight."
A shake of the head. Adian sighed.
"Does Darrow realize that these men are exhausted? And though we won the field, it was not an easy victory by any means?"
"Oh, I'm sure he does,"
Nox said, dark brows rising high with that faint amusement.
"Tell Darrow," Ravi cut in, "that he can come meet us, then, rather than make us move an entire army just to see him."
"The meeting is an excuse,"
Sol said quietly. Adian nodded. At Ravi's narrowed brows, his elder brother clarified.
"He wants to make sure that we don't."
Sol trailed off, aware of the thief who listened to every word. But Nox smiled, as if he grasped the meaning anyway. Darrow wanted to ensure that they didn't take the army from here and march southward. Had cut them off before they could do so, with this order to move tomorrow. Ravi growled, at last getting the gist of his brother's words. Adian and Ren swapped glances. The Lord of Alsbrook frowned, but nodded.
"Rest wherever you can find a fire to welcome you, Nox Owen,"
Adian said to the messenger.
"We travel at dawn."
Adian set out to find Killian to convey the order. The tents were a maze of exhausted soldiers, the injured groaning amongst them. Adian stopped long enough to greet those men, to offer a hand on the shoulder or a word of reassurance. Some would last the night, many wouldn't. He halted at other fires as well, to commend the fighting done, whether the soldiers hailed from Terrasen or the Wastes or Wendlin. At a few of them, he even shared in their ales or meals. Roe had taught him that. The art of making his men want to follow him, die for him. But more than that, seeing them as men. As people with families and friends, who had as much to risk as he did in fighting here. It was no burden, despite the exhaustion creeping over him, to thank them for their courage, their swords. But it did take time. The sun had fully set, the muddy camp cast in deep shadows amid the fires by the time he neared Killian's tent. Elgin, one of the Bane captains, clapped him on the shoulder as he passed, the man's grizzled face set in a grim smile.
"Not a bad first day, whelp,"
Elgin grumbled. He'd called Adian that since those initial days in the Bane's ranks, had been one of the first men here to treat him not as a prince who had lost his kingdom, but as a warrior fighting to defend it. Much of his battlefield training he owed to Elgin, along with his life, considering the countless times the man's wisdom and quick sword had saved him. Adian grinned at the aging captain.
You fought well, for a grandfather.
The man's daughter had given birth to a son just this past winter. Elgin growled.
I'd like to see you wield a sword so well when you're my age, boy.
Then he was gone, aiming for a campfire that held several other older commanders and captains. They noticed Adian's attention and lifted their mugs in salute. Adian only inclined his head and continued on.
Adian.
He'd know that voice if he were blind. Lysandra stepped from behind a tent, her face clean despite her muddy clothes. He halted, finally feeling the weight of the dirt and gore on himself.
What?
She ignored his tone.
I could fly to Darrow tonight. Give him whatever message you want.
He wants us to move the army back to him and then to Orinth,
Adian said, making to continue to Killian's tent.
Immediately.
She stepped in his path.
I can go. Tell him this army needs time to rest.
Is this some attempt to re-enter my good graces?
He was too tired, too weary to bother beating around the truth. Her emerald eyes went as cold as the winter night around them.
I don't give a damn about your good graces. I care about this army being worn down with unnecessary movements.
How do you even know what was said in the tent?
He knew the answer as soon as he'd voiced the question. She'd been in some small, unnoticed form. Precisely why so many kingdoms and courts had hunted down and killed any shifters. Unparalleled spies and assassins. She crossed her arms.
If you don't want me sitting in on your war councils, then say so.
He took in her face, her stiff posture. Exhaustion lay heavy on her, her golden skin pale and eyes haunted. He didn't know where she was staying in this camp, if she even had a tent. Guilt gnawed on him for a heartbeat.
When exactly will our queen make her grand return?
Her mouth tightened.
Tonight, if you think it wise.
To miss the battle and only appear to bask in the glory of victory? I doubt the troops would find that heartening.
Then tell me where and when, and I'll do it.
Just as you blindly obeyed our queen, you'll now obey me?
I obey no man, she snarled. But I'm not fool enough to believe I know more about armies and soldiers than you do. My pride is not so easily bruised.
Adian took a step forward.
And mine is?
What I did for her and for this kingdom. Look at these men, your men. Look at the allies we've gathered and tell me that if they knew the truth, they would be so eager to fight.
The Bane fought when we believed her dead. It would be no different.
It might be for our allies, for the people of Terrasen.
She didn't back down for a moment.
Go ahead and punish me for the rest of your life. For 1,000 years, if you wind up settling.
With Gavriel for his father, he might very well. He tried not to dwell on the possibility. He'd barely interacted with the Fey royals or their soldiers beyond what was necessary. And they mostly kept to themselves. Yet they did not sneer at him for his demi-Fey status. Didn't really seem to care what blood flowed in his veins, so long as he kept them alive.
We have enough enemies as it is, Lysandra went on. But if you truly wish to make me one of them as well, that's fine. I don't regret what I did, nor will I ever.
Fine,
was all he could think to say. She shrewdly looked him over, as if weighing the man within.
It was real, Adian,
she said.
All of it. I don't care if you believe me or not, but it was real for me.
He couldn't bear to hear it.
I have a meeting,
he lied, and stepped around her.
Go slither off somewhere else.
Hurt flashed in her eyes, quickly hidden.
He was the worst sort of bastard for it. But he continued into Killian's tent. She didn't come after him.
She was a stupid fool. A stupid fool to have said anything, and to now feel something in her chest crumpling.
She had enough dignity left not to beg, to not watch Adian go into Killian's tent and wonder if it was for a meeting, or because he was seeking to remind himself of life after so much killing today.
To not give one inch of space to the burning in her eyes. Lysandra made her way toward the comfortable tent Soul of Syria had given her near his. A kind, sharply clever man who had no interest in women. The younger brother, Ravi, had eyed her, as all men did. But he'd kept a respectful distance and had talked to her, not her chest. So she liked him, too. Didn't mind having a tent in their midst. An honor, actually. She'd gone from having to crawl into the beds of lords, doing whatever they asked of her with a smile, to fighting beside them. And she was now a lady herself. One whom both the lords of Syria and the lord of Alsbrook recognized, despite Darrow spitting on it. It might have filled her with gladness had battle not worn her out so completely that the walk back to the tent seemed endless. Had the general prince not filleted her spirit so thoroughly. Every step was an effort, the mud sucking at her boots. She turned down an alley of tents, the banners shifting from the white stag on emerald green of the Bane to the twin silver fish on vibrant turquoise of those belonging to the House of Syria. Only 50 more feet to her tent. Then she could lie down. The soldiers knew who she was, what she was. None, if they glanced twice in her direction, called out to her in the way men had done in Rifthold. Lysandra trudged into her tent, sighing in exhausted relief, as she shouldered her way through the flaps, aiming for her cot. Sleep, cold and empty, found her, before she could remember to remove her boots.
Chapter 11.
You're sure of this?
His heart pounding, Kaol braced a hand on the desk in the quarters he shared with Irene, and pointed to the map that Nezrin and Sartak had spread before them.
The soldiers we questioned had been given orders on where to rendezvous, Sartak said from the other side of the desk, still clad in his Rukan flying clothes.
They were far enough behind the others that they would have needed directions.
Kaol rubbed a hand over his jaw.
And you got a count on the army?
10,000 strong, Nezrin said, still leaning against the nearby wall. But no sign of the Iron Teeth legions, only foot soldiers, and about 1,000 cavalry.
As far as you could see from the air, Princess Hassar countered, twirling the end of her long, dark braid. Who is to say what might be lurking amid the ranks?
How many Volg demons, the princess didn't need to add. Of all the royal siblings, Hassar had taken Princess Duva's infestation and their sister Tumaloon's murder at her hand, the most personally. Had sailed here to avenge both her sisters, and to ensure it didn't happen again. If this war had not been so desperate, Kaol might have paid good coin to see Hassar rip into Volg hides.
The soldiers didn't divulge that information,
Sartak admitted,
only their intended location.
At his side, Irene wrapped her fingers around Kaol's and squeezed. He hadn't realized how cold, how trembling his hand had become until her warmth seeped into him.
Because the intended target of that enemy army now marching to the northwest?
Aniel.
Your father has not kneeled to Morath, Hassar mused, flicking her heavy braid over the shoulder of her embroidered sky blue jacket. It must make Erewhon nervous enough that he saw the need to send such an army to crush it.
Kaol swallowed the dryness in his mouth.
But Erewhon has already sacked Rifthold,
he said, pointing to the capital on the coast, then dragging a finger inland along the Avery.
He controls most of the river. Why not send the witches to sack it instead? Why not sail right up the Avery?
Why take an army so far to the coast, then all the way back?
To clear the way for the rest,
Irene said, her mouth a tight line.
To instill as much terror as possible.
Kaol blew out a breath.
In Terrasen. Erewhon wants Terrasen to know what's coming. That he can take his time and expend his forces on destroying swaths of land.
Does Eniel have an army? Sartak asked, the prince's dark eyes steady. Kaol straightened, hand balling into a fist, as if it could keep the dread pooling in his stomach at bay.
Hurry.
They had to hurry. Not one able to take on 10,000 soldiers. The keep might survive a siege, but not indefinitely. And it wouldn't be able to fit the city's population.
Only his father's chosen few. Silence fell, and Kaol knew they were waiting for him to speak,
to voice the question himself. He hated every word that came out of his mouth.
Is it worth it to launch our troops here and march to save Eniel?
Because they couldn't risk the Avery, not when Rifthold sat at its entrance. They'd have to find a place to land and march inland.
Across the plains, over the Acanthus, into Oakwald, and to the very foothills of the White Fangs.
Days of travel on horseback.
The gods knew how long an army would take.
There might not be an Aniel left by the time we get there, Hassar said,
with more gentleness than the sharp-faced princess usually bothered with. Enough so that Kaol reined in the urge to tell them that was precisely why they had to move now.
If the southern half of Otterlin is beyond help, then we might land near Mia.
She pointed to the city in the north of the kingdom.
March near the border and set ourselves up to intercept them.
Or we could go directly to Terrasen and sail up the Florine to Orinth's doorstep,
Sartak mused.
We don't know what we'll find in either,
Nezrin countered quietly, her cool voice filling the room. A different woman in some ways than the one who'd gone with Kaol to the southern continent.
Mia could be overrun, and Terrasen might be facing its own siege. The days it would take for our scouts to fly northward would waste vital time, if they return at all.
Kaol drew in a deep breath, willing his heart to calm. He hadn't the faintest idea where Dorian might be, if he'd gone with Aelin to Terrasen. The soldiers Nezrin and Sartak had interrogated had not known.
What would his friend have chosen? He could almost hear Dorian yelling at him for even hesitating.
Hear him ordering Kaol to stop wondering where he'd gone and hurry to Aniel.
Aniel lies near the Farian Gap, Hassar said, which is also controlled by Morath and is another outpost for the Iron Teeth and their wyverns.
By bringing our forces so far inland, we risk not only the army marching for Aniel, but finding a host of witches at our backs.
She met Kaol's gaze,
her face as unflinching as her words. Would saving the city gain us anything?
It is his home, Irene said quietly, but not weakly,
her chin refusing to dip even an inch in the royal's presence.
I think that would be all the proof we need to defend it.
Kaol tightened his hand around hers in silent thanks. Dorian would have said the same. Sartak studied the map once more.
The Avery splits near Aniel,
he murmured, running a finger along it.
It veers southward to the Silver Lake in Aniel, and then the other branch runs northward past the Farian Gap, skirting along the ruins and up to nearly the border of Terrasen itself.
I can read a map, brother, Hassar growled.
Sartak ignored her, his eyes meeting Kaol's once more.
A spark lit their steady depths.
We avoid the Avery until Aniel, march inland, and when the city is secure, we begin a campaign northward along the Avery.
Nezrin pushed off the wall to prowl to the prince's side.
Into the Farian Gap? We'd be facing the witches then.
Sartak gave her a half grin.
Then it's a good thing we have rooks.
Hassar leaned over the map.
If we secure the Farian Gap, then we could possibly march all the way to Terrasen,
taking the inland route.
She shook her head.
But what of the Armada?
They wait to intercept Kashin's fleet, Sartak said. We take the soldiers, the Dargon cavalry, the Rooks, and they wait for the rest of the army to arrive and tell them to meet us here.
Hope stirred in Kaol's chest. But that still leaves us at least a week behind the army marching for Aniel,
Nezrin said.
Truth. They'd never catch up to them in time. Any delay could cost untold lives.
They need to be warned, Kaol said. Aniel must be warned and given time to prepare.
Sartak nodded.
I can be there in a few days' flight. No,
Kaol said, and Irene lifted a brow.
If you can spare me a Rook and a rider, I'll go myself. Stay here and ready the Rooks to fly. Tomorrow, if possible. A day or two at most.
He gestured to Hisar.
Dock the ships and lead the troops inland as swiftly as they can march.
Irene's eyes turned wary, well aware of what and whom he would face in Aniel. The homecoming he had never pictured. Certainly not under these circumstances.
I'm coming with you, his wife said.
He squeezed her hand again, as if to say, I'm not at all surprised to hear that. Irene squeezed right back.
Sartak and Hisar nodded,
and Nezrin opened her mouth as if she'd object, but nodded too. They'd leave tonight, under cover of darkness. Finding Dorian again would have to wait.
Irene chewed on her lip, no doubt calculating what they'd need to pack, what to tell the other healers.
He prayed they'd be swift enough, prayed that he could figure out what the hell to say to his father after the oath he'd broken, after all that lay between them. And more than that, what he'd say to his mother, and the not-so-young brother he'd left behind when he'd chosen Dorian over his birthright. Kaol had given Irene the title owed to her in marrying him. Lady Westfall. He wondered if he could stomach being called Lord, if it mattered at all, given what bore down upon the city on the Silver Lake. If it would matter at all if they didn't make it in time. Sartak braced a hand on the hilt of his sword.
Hold the defenses for as long as you can, Lord Westfall. The Rooks will be a day or so behind you. The foot soldiers a week behind that.
Kaol clasped Sartak's hand, then Hisar's.
Thank you.
Hisar's mouth curved into a half smile.
Thank us if we save your city.
Chapter 12. Everything. She had given everything for this, and had been glad to do it. Aelin lay in darkness, the slab of iron like a starless night overhead. She'd awoken in here, had been here for a long time. Long enough she'd relieved herself. Hadn't cared. Perhaps it had all been for nothing. The queen who was promised. Promised to die. To surrender herself to fulfill an ancient princess's debt. To save this world. She wouldn't be able to do it. She would fail in that, even if she outlasted Maeve. Outlasted what she might have glimpsed lay beneath the queen's skin. If that had been real at all. Against Erewhon there had been little hope, but against Maeve as well. Silent tears pooled in her mask. It didn't matter. She wasn't leaving this place, this box. She would never again feel the buttery warmth of the sun on her hair, or a sea-kissed breeze on her cheeks. She couldn't stop crying, ceaseless and relentless. As if some dam had cracked open inside her the moment she'd seen the blood dribble down Maeve's face. She didn't care if Cairn saw the tears, smelled them. Let him break her until she was bloody smithereens on the floor. Let him do it over and over again. She wouldn't fight. Couldn't bear to fight. A door groaned open and closed. Stalking footsteps neared. Then a thump on the lid of the coffin.
How does a few more days in there sound to you?
She wished she could fold herself into the blackness around her. Cairn told Fenris to relieve himself and return. Silence filled the room. Then a thin scraping. Along the top of the box, as if Cairn were running a dagger over it.
I've been thinking how to repay you when I let you out.
Aelin blocked out his words. Did nothing but gaze into the dark. She was so tired. So tired. For Terrasen, she had gladly done this. All of it. For Terrasen, she deserved to pay this price. She had tried to make it right. Had tried. And failed. And she was so tired. Fireheart. The whispered word floated through the eternal night. A glimmer of sound, of light. Fireheart. The woman's voice was soft, loving. Her mother's voice. Aelin turned her face away. Even that movement was more than she could bear. Fireheart, why do you cry? Aelin could not answer. Fireheart? The words were a gentle brush down her cheek. Fireheart, why do you cry? And from far away, deep within her, Aelin whispered toward that ray of memory. Because I am lost, and I do not know the way. Cairn was still talking, still scraping his knife over the coffin's lid. But Aelin did not hear him as she found a woman lying beside her. A mirror, or a reflection of the face she'd bear in a few years' time, should she live that long. Borrowed time. Every moment of it had been borrowed time. Evelyn Ashriver ran gentle fingers down Aelin's cheek, over the mask. Aelin could have sworn she felt them against her skin. You have been very brave, her mother said. You have been very brave for so very long. Aelin couldn't stop the silent sob that worked its way up her throat. But you must be brave a little while longer, my fire heart. She leaned into her mother's touch. You must be brave a little while longer, and remember. Her mother placed a phantom hand over Aelin's heart. It is the strength of this that matters. No matter where you are, no matter how far, this will lead you home. Aelin managed to slide a hand up to her chest, to cover her mother's fingers. Only thin fabric and iron met her skin. But Evelyn Ashriver held Aelin's gaze, the softness turning hard and gleaming as fresh steel. It is the strength of this that matters, Aelin. Aelin's fingers dug into her chest as she mouthed, the strength of this. Evelyn nodded. Cairn's hissed threats danced through the coffin, his knife scraping and scraping. Evelyn's face didn't falter. You are my daughter. You were born of two mighty bloodlines. That strength flows through you, lives in you. Evelyn's face blazed with the fierceness of the women who had come before them, all the way back to the Faerie Queen whose eyes they both bore. You do not yield. Then she was gone, like dew under the morning sun. But the words lingered, blossomed within Aelin, bright as a kindled ember. You do not yield. Cairn scraped his dagger over the metal, right above her head.
When I cut you up this time, bitch, I'm going to...
Aelin slammed her hand into the lid. Cairn paused. Aelin pounded her fist into the iron again. Again.
You do not yield.
Again.
You do not yield.
Again. Again. Until she was alive with it, until her blood was raining onto her face, washing away the tears, until every pound of her fist into the iron was a battle cry.
You do not yield. You do not yield. You do not yield.
It rose in her, burning and roaring, and she gave herself wholly to it. Distantly, close by, wood crashed, like someone had staggered into something. Then shouting. Aelin hammered her fist into the metal, the song within her pulsing and cresting, a tidal wave racing for the shore.
Get me that Gloriella!
The words meant nothing. He was nothing. Would always be nothing. Over and over she pounded against the lid. Over and over that song of fire and darkness flared through her, out of her, into the world. You do not yield. Something hissed and crackled nearby, and smoke poured through the lid. But Aelin kept striking until the smoke choked her, until its sweet scent dragged her under and away. And when she awoke chained on the altar, she beheld what she had done to the iron coffin. The top of the lid had been warped. A great hump now protruded, the metal stretched thin, as if it had come so very close to breaking entirely. On a dark hilltop overlooking a sleeping kingdom, Rowan froze. The others were already halfway down the hill, leading the horses along the dried slope that would take them over Acadia's border and onto the arid plains below. His hand dropped from the stallion's reins. He had to have imagined it. He scanned the starry sky, the slumbering lands beyond, the Lord of the North above. It hit him a heartbeat later, erupted around him and roared, over and over and over, as if it were a hammer against an anvil. The others whirled to him, and that raging, fiery song charged closer, through him, down the mating bond, down into his very soul. A bellow of fury, of defiance. From down the hill, Lorcan rasped, Rowan. It was impossible, utterly impossible, and yet, North, Gavriel said, turning his bay gelding. The surge came from the north. From Doranel. A beacon in the night. Power rippling into the world as it had done in Skull's Bay. It filled him with sound, with fire, and light, as if it screamed again and again, I am alive, I am alive, I am alive. And then silence, like it had been cut off, extinguished.